This week, sunrise is at around 7:25, sunset at 4:20. By the middle of the week, it will be around 12 degrees Celsius, rainy and quite windy.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition due to drop through the letterboxes of postal listeners on the 11th of November.
Some highlights from the Express and Star this week. Wednesday's news. Author of Lee Reacher novels champions local libraries. Thursday's news. Why we feel the cold more as we get older. Friday's news. Monument to wartime reserved occupation workers. Months of delays due to burnt Tree Island roadworks. 3 million helping hands needed to take up voluntary work. Saturday's news. Leading Dudley councillors' frustration with metro delays. Winter coughs and colds, or could it be signs of pneumonia? Life-size thriller tribute cake to Michael Jackson. Recipe, sweet potatoes and goat's cheese. Monday's news. Charity chief says, hospices should be part of NHS. Defibrillator and bleed kit stolen. Tuesday's news. Father and son bond in new John Lewis Christmas advert. Transport bosses bid to make evening transport easier and safer. Walking may protect you from Alzheimer's.
All those stories and more coming up as usual with courtesy of Express and Star newspapers. And as always along the way, we'll have listings of the audio described TV programmes coming up this week and some radio programmes too. And there'll be a final part of the interview Prince did with a guy who is associated with that funny little church in the garden in Blackheath. And along the way, there might be a reminder I'll be able to squeeze in about the upcoming SVI Annual Forum on the 17th of November, though it's worth mentioning that many people will get a full audio of that invitation in the post quite soon. And so, on to the first day's news.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 29th of October. Reacher author Lee Childs champions local libraries. This story is brought to you by Paul Jenkins. James Grant, CBE, better known as Lee Childs, who sold around 200 million books in his career, champions local libraries at a sold-out talk and questions answer session at West Bromwich Town Hall. Visiting as part of the Sandwell Library Literature Festival, the now 70-year-old, who took on writing only 31 years ago when he was made redundant from Granada TV, spoke to around 200 people at the newly refurbished High Street venue, many of whom brought along books for him to sign. Invited to the festival partly to promote the borough's libraries and giving his services free of charge, he spoke to the Express and Star before going on stage and said his life, as it is owed to the existence of books. He said, "I grew up in Handsworth Wood many years ago and still have many friends here, but I am here in support of libraries in the area because they created my life, they enabled it. The reason I am a writer today is because I was a reader, and the reason I was a reader was because of libraries. We couldn't afford books as a kid, but were able to go to a library and get a book for free, which was fantastic and left a lasting impression on me, which led to the career that I have had." Child now spends most of his time in the USA, wrote the Jack Reacher series, which has now been translated into 49 languages, been turned into a film franchise and generated over $1 billion in general sales. He said he didn't hesitate when asked to come to West Bromwich when he watched his first football game at the Hawthorns before becoming an Aston Villa fan, and said the talk and appearance would be partly about his career but also about the importance of young people reading and using libraries. He said, "I understand local authorities everywhere are strapped for cash, but I think libraries should be on the funding list as they look like a food bank for the brain. They're most relevant than ever, even in today's world, and are valuable to all members of society, and I hope this will come across on stage." Sandwell Council leader Kerry Carmichael, Deputy Councillor Suzanne Hartwell and Mayor Stephen Mellier all attended the event at the Town Hall, which has been revitalised internally and externally in the last year. Let's go back to horse and cart. I've had enough of the Tories and reform announcements trying to outdo each other. They're simply tinkering around the edges with their plan to deport 600,000 or 750,000, leave the EHCR, scrap net zero and cut crime by 50%. Total lack of ambition. What the public craves for is a return to the good old days before Industrial Revolution, so immediately deport all those who arrived since 1800 and their living dependents, that will reduce the population to 15 million. We can then demolish all the houses built since that date in order to return to smaller towns, villages and reclaim, safeguard our green and pleasant land, abolish Parliament in favour of a dictator and all laws, so instantly achieving 0% crime. We can revert using horse and carts, eradicating problems with roads and railways and get everyone working down the pits on the land. Nobody will miss all the food that we've had forced on us from abroad, Indian, Chinese, French, Mexican, Italian, Thai, Japanese, fish and chips to name just a few. Time to give the people what they really want. Woman on trial for violent disorder says she just wanted to leave. A woman charged with violent disorder ahead of a fatal attack on Matthew Adams outside a pub in West Bromwich had told a jury she had just wanted to leave before he was severely beaten. Nicholas Stanley, 39, was shown on CCTV from the Gough Arms screaming, shouting and fighting as Matthew Adams and a group of family and friends began brawling. Stanley has been charged with violent disorder and pleaded not guilty. She is on trial with Mark Shorthouse, 55, who's pleaded guilty to violent disorder but denied murder and manslaughter. Ryan Stanley, aged 30, John Wise, a 16-year-old boy, all of Sandwell, are also on trial for the fatal attack and have been accused of and deny murder, manslaughter and violent disorder. Stanley told Wolverhampton Crown Court on Monday that she wanted to leave the West Bromwich pub before Adams was given a severe beating in the car park, which was also caught on CCTV. She said, "I just wanted to get out of the pub and go home, but before we could leave, Mr. Adams again attacked John. We did not even get to our car before the fighting started again." When shown the CCTV footage showing her fighting with Adams' girlfriend, Stanley said, "I was just protecting my family and friends. I could hear John on the floor screaming whilst being attacked by Mr. Adams." A jury sent a note to the judge, Michael Chambers KC, asking if he could ask Stanley how she felt when she found out that the father of two from the Yew Tree estate had died 4 days later. She said, "It was upsetting. A man had died. I was upset." But when asked why she gave no comment at the police station after being arrested, she replied, "I was advised to give no comment. I was very anxious because I had never been arrested before. I had never been to a police station before. I needed a sick bucket because of how anxious I was at the police station." Echoing her co-defendants, John Wise and Mark Shorthouse said that there are bits missing from the CCTV. There was more to what happened than what has been shown in the footage. Mr. Adams attacked us. Mr. Adams was knocked out after the final confrontation outside the Gough Arms, West Bromwich, in the early hours of March 19, 2023. He died 4 days later, having refused to check into hospital. He told his doctor he'd been beaten up by eight people and told a friend he'd bitten a chunk out of one of them. The trial continues. We would like to thank all those who gave Prue such wonderful care at the end of her life. Her last days were comfortable, contented and surrounded by love. Cleese said in the statement, "How very sad. Prue was a really wonderful comic actress. I've recently been watching a number of clips of Old Taz whilst researching a book. Scene after scene, she was absolutely perfect. She was a very sweet lady. I was very, very fond of her." Faulty Taz won the BAFTA for Best Scripted Comedy in 1976, and this year marked 50 years since the comedy show first appeared on our screens. The series also starred the late Andrew Sachs as hapless Spanish waiter Manuel and Cleese then wife Connie Booth as chambermaid Polly. Downing Street passed on its condolences to Scales' family. Scales was diagnosed with vascular dementia in 2013. She also played Queen Elizabeth II in Alan Bennett's A Question of Attrition, a role which earned her a BAFTA nomination, and in 1973, Scales teamed up with Ronnie Barker on the scene of Seven of One, also for the BBC. John Pertree, director of comedy at the BBC, said, "All of us at the BBC Comedy are so sorry to hear of Prunella Scales' passing. She was a national treasure whose brilliance as Sybil Fawlty lit up screens and still made us laugh today. We send our love and condolences to her family and friends." Her late husband starred in the comedy drama Brass, sitcom Not Going Out and Coronation Street in EastEnders. Together, the couple filmed 10 series of the Channel 4 programme Great Canal Journeys, in which they saw them travel across the UK and other parts of the world, exploring different waterways, and the couple also talked openly about Scales' diagnosis. The last journey for the programme was broadcast in June 2019. Scales credits ranged from The Long Day's Journey into Night on the stage of the West End in 1991 to playing the Widow Sarah in TV and radio comedy. After Henry, she also appeared in films including The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearn and Consuming Passions. PCC backs MP's call for tougher laws on ghost number plates. MPs are to be lobbied in Westminster to back a long-running West Midlands campaign to crack down on ghost plates. West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner PCC Simon Foster has said that West Bromwich MP Sarah Coombs believes Parliament needs to act to stamp out the use of illegal number plates. They'll be heading down to Parliament on December the 2nd to talk to MPs about the campaigns and the call for tougher measures to be put in place. In September, Mr Foster and West Midlands Police Road Policing Unit launched Operation Phantom, which used cutting-edge technology to expose thousands of illegal number plates operating across Birmingham. In just 2 weeks, 4,335 instances of these non-compliant plates were identified in a single location in Birmingham. Earlier this month, the Parliamentary Vehicle Registration Plate Inquiry was set up to look into the issue. Mr Foster said, "I have welcomed the launch of the new Parliamentary Vehicle Registration Plate Inquiry as a major development in my campaign to crack down on illegal ghost plates. The inquiry, led by the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Transport Safety, will examine the growing problem of untraceable number plates which allow dangerous drivers and criminals to evade accountability, detection and enforcement in the UK's roads. This inquiry is about exposing offenders, bringing them to justice and keeping people safe on our roads. It is vital that we now build on the progress and deliver the changes needed to tighten up the law and keep the people and the communities of our region safe and secure. A recent West Midlands police operation led to thousands of so-called ghost plates detections. I've been campaigning for national action on this issue for some time and I'm pleased to see that our work here in the West Midlands is now gathering significant momentum. That is why on December the 2nd I am taking my campaign to Westminster to join local MP Sarah Coombs to brief members of Parliament in connection with this important issue."
This is Alison, reading a selection of articles from the Express and Star dated Thursday, the 30th of October. Drink driver who attacked officers avoids jail term. A drunken driver who ploughed into a Hales Owen Island after performing a solo sex act and then attacked two police officers has avoided jail. Alfred Brosey, 52, of Church Lane, West Bromwich, was found by police officers drunk and incoherent in his van on the middle of Mucklow Hill Island at 11:30 p.m. on January the 11th this year. When the police officer opened the van door, Brosey slurred he owned the van but was a passenger and the driver had fled the scene. When asked for the keys, he kicked the PC, who immediately called for emergency backup. He kicked the PC in the side twice again before backup arrived, forcing the officer to pepper spray him. It took several officers to manhandle Brosey into the back of a police van, where he ranted and raved, as well as spitting towards any officer who approached him. Prosecuting, Stefan Kolodinsky said he assaulted two officers, spitting at both and kicking one and punching the other. He was extremely aggressive throughout his dealings with police officers, who both were distressed. Recorder Joanne Barker Casey sentenced Brosey to 32 weeks imprisonment, suspended for 18 months, 150 hours of unpaid work, 15 rehabilitation days, and disqualified him from driving for 32 months. Hub gets new look after scoring £1.1 million. The ribbon has officially been cut on the newly refurbished Wednesbury Hub, thanks to a £1.1 million cash injection from the Premier League, the FA and Government's Football Foundation. Originally opened in 2011 as the Friar Park Hub, the small-sided 3G pitches, gym and community pavilion at this site had fallen into disrepair, severely limiting their use by the local community. Now, thanks to grant funding from football bodies, alongside additional investment of £250,000 from Sandwell Council, the site has been transformed into a vibrant, inclusive hub for sport, fitness and community activity. Work which has been carried out includes refurbishment of existing pitches to provide a total of 7 small-sided 3G surfaces, replacement of 23 sets of floodlights with energy-efficient LED units, new equipment, flooring and decoration for the gym, new energy-efficient boilers and LED lighting throughout the pavilion, and refurbishment of the community cafe. The revamped facilities are already being used by 16 local grassroots junior football clubs and are supporting recreational football with daily pay and play sessions. In the next 12 months, the hub is expected to support the creation of more than a dozen new women's and girls' football teams using the site. From November, the hub will be used each Sunday morning for matches by 32 mini soccer teams of Walsall Junior Youth Football League. It will also host free youth sessions, holiday camps, and structured football clubs for children not currently part of a team. The site will be operated by the charity Leisure United on behalf of the National Football Trust, who will reinvest any surplus income generated back into grassroots sport locally. Mark Coulson, Leisure United Chief Executive Officer, said, "We extend our heartfelt thanks to the Premier League, the FA and the Government's Football Foundation for their generous £1.1 million investment, as well as to Sandwell Borough Council for their crucial £250,000 contribution." The new hub is on the former site of Phoenix Collegiate, who played a key role in developing the refurbishment project. Thief who escaped custody through hospital window avoids jail again. A West Bromwich thief who escaped custody by climbing out of a hospital toilet window has avoided jail again after being given a suspended sentence. Liam Robbins, aged 22, gave his prison warders the slip when he asked permission to use the bathroom at Walsall Manor Hospital on April the 26th. Fleet of foot Robbins had disappeared by the time the prison officers raised the alarm and managed to outrun the long arm of the law until July. Robbins of Bexley Grove was on remand for 2 charges of theft after stealing a tradesman's tools in Walsall in November 2023 and then taking a widow's beloved Ford Fiesta in Lichfield in December last year. Recorder John Robson KC pointed out to Robbins that these offences carry significantly lesser sentences than escaping from custody, which has a maximum tariff of life imprisonment. The recorder described both Robbins' escape and time on the run as unsophisticated, not premeditated, and carried out without any violence. In mitigation, the court heard Robbins had matured since becoming a father and had the added burden of being a carer for his partner, who has told him he will get the push if he has another brush with the law. Recorder Robson sentenced Robbins to 16 months imprisonment, which was suspended for 18 months, a 12-month rehabilitation order encompassing 20 rehabilitation days and 100 hours of unpaid work. He said, "The people you stole from were negatively impacted beyond the cost of the items you stole. First, the £2,000 tradesman's tools which prevented him from earning a living. And the woman's car you stole was her late husband's and had a lot of sentimental value. However, you pleaded guilty to these crimes, which gives you 20% credit. In April, you were taken to hospital and after going to the toilet, broke free and ran away. It was unsophisticated and there is not much evidence of premeditation, only asking to go to the toilet. Your time whilst free also did not show any evidence of sophistication either." He added, "As your lead offence is escaping custody, I came here today planning to give you a custodial sentence. However, after reading your pre-sentence report and listening to your mitigation and your remorse, I have decided to suspend your sentence. If you commit another crime in the next 18 months, you will be brought back here and this sentence will immediately be activated, as well as that of whatever crime you have committed. I hope you take advantage of this chance you have been given," added Recorder Robson. Why you feel the cold more as you get older. Helpful hints on how to stay cosy during the chillier months. The chill in the air has significantly ramped up recently, signalling that scarf season has officially begun. If you are still struggling to keep warm, despite piling on the layers, and are feeling increasingly sensitive to the cold, age might be playing a part in this. We spoke to Dr. Elise Dallas, GP at London General Practice, who has explained 6 common reasons why we tend to feel the cold more as we age, and has also shared some helpful advice on how to stay warm and cosy during the chillier months. 1. Slower metabolism. A slower metabolism contributes to feeling colder as you age. Metabolism slows with age due to reduced lean muscle mass and hormonal changes, explains Dallas. Thyroid function declines, especially free T3 levels, which lowers metabolic rate and heat production. Adrenal changes include reduced DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone, and altered cortisol rhythms, which can affect energy balance and thermoregulation. Thermogenesis, the process of heat production in the body, becomes less efficient. It includes basal metabolic heat, shivering, and non-shivering mechanisms like brown fat activation. 2. Less muscles and fat. Many of us tend to lose muscle and fat later on in life, which reduces our body's insulation. Muscle mass declines due to sarcopenia, reducing heat generation. Subcutaneous fat also decreases, reducing insulation, says Dallas. Fat redistributes from limbs to central areas, which lowers peripheral warmth. 3. Poor circulation. Circulation tends to naturally decline with age. Blood vessels stiffen and vasodilation becomes less responsive, says Dallas. Peripheral circulation slows, especially in extremities, reducing heat delivery. 4. Chronic conditions. Chronic conditions such as hypothyroidism, anemia, and diabetes can all increase sensitivity to cold in older adults by affecting the body's ability to generate and circulate heat. Hypothyroidism reduces metabolic heat production, and anemia lowers oxygen delivery to tissues, reducing cellular energy and heat, explains Dallas. Whereas diabetes can cause peripheral neuropathy and vascular damage, impairing heat sensation and circulation. In addition, heart failure reduces cardiac output, limiting blood flow to the skin and extremities. 5. Medication side effects. Due to age-related changes in the body and the common use of multiple medications, older adults are more susceptible to side effects. Diuretics can cause dehydration and electrolyte imbalance, impairing thermoregulation, says Dallas. Antidepressants and tricyclics may affect hypothalamic temperature control and cause vasoconstriction. Furthermore, vasodilators like calcium channel blockers and alpha blockers can impair vascular tone and heat retention, and beta blockers reduce cardiac output and peripheral circulation. 6. Additional factors. An array of other age-related factors all play a part too. Thinner skin, reduced sweat gland function, lower physical activity, and impaired hypothalamic response all reduce the body's ability to sense and respond to cold, adds Dallas. Lower calorie intake and reduced brown fat activity also contribute. Exposure to cold temperatures can lead to many serious health problems for older adults, says Dallas. Hypothermia can occur, even indoors, and cold stress increases cardiovascular risk, worsens arthritis, and can impair cognition and mobility, increasing fall risk. Frostbite is also a risk in severe cold. She advises, wear thermal layers, including hats, gloves and socks. Also, keep indoor temperature at least 20 degrees C. Use heated blankets or hot water bottles safely and check for drafts and insulate windows and doors. In addition, eat regular warm meals, stay hydrated and try to stay active indoors to boost circulation. Woman in 60s dies after being hit by car. A woman who was seriously injured following a collision in Sandwell has been confirmed dead. The woman, aged in her 60s, was taken to hospital after being hit by a vehicle near the junction of Wolverhampton Road and Albert Road in Oldbury just after 6:30 a.m. yesterday. A 31-year-old man who was previously detained on suspicion of drug driving has now been further arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving. He remains in police custody for questioning. West Midlands Police say they are keen to hear from anyone who may have information, and particularly dashcam footage.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 31st of October. Monuments tribute to wartime reserved occupation workers. Written by James Vukmirovich. A new sculpture honouring Black Country workers who carried out reserved occupations during the Second World War is to be unveiled in Sandwell. Black Country sculptor Luke Perry was inspired by his grandfather Eric Atwood's story to create the 12-foot-tall steel sculpture of a worker, accompanied by a real anchor where names can be engraved. A chainmaker, Eric Atwood was one of around 5 million men covered by the UK's schedule of reserved occupations during the Second World War, which covered jobs essential to the war effort and daily life, working alongside women on the home front. The monument, called Fighting From Home, has been part-funded by the Arts Council, together with Luke and his family's factory Solid Swivel in Cradley Heath, who have donated time and materials. Sandwell Council has provided advice and support throughout the project, including carrying out a clean-up of the churchyard ahead of the monument's unveiling ceremony at 2 p.m. on Remembrance Sunday. The monument's unveiling this year coincides with the Remembrance Sunday closest to the 80th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. Mr. Perry said, "This is something I have wanted to build for 10 years, as my granddad and many of his friends had been in reserved occupations during the Second World War. These were men who couldn't sign up for military service as their trade was so important to the war effort. Like many men and women around here, he was a chainmaker and made Navy chain during the war. This monument is in memory of those uncelebrated men, many of whom suffered immensely from survivor's guilt and a real fear that they didn't play their part, despite the importance of their work. As a monument exclusively to reserved occupations, I think it is unique in the UK and certainly in the Black Country and industrial Midlands, where there has never been a memorial in recognition of these vital workers from that period." The monument will stand on the site of St. Luke's Church, now demolished, which was the historic home of many chain and anchor-making families, further along the same road as Hingley & Sons, where the Titanic anchor and chain were made in 1910. Mr. Perry said, "I am very proud to have been able to make something that feels so solid and befitting to these men who sadly did not see any recognition in their own lifetimes." Councillor Kerry Carmichael, Sandwell Council leader, said, "This humbling new sculpture, Fighting From Home, will pay tribute to all those Black Country workers who played their part in reserved occupations. This will ensure their stories and contributions to the war effort are remembered for generations to come." People are being invited to put forward names of family members who held reserved occupations to be added to the monument in time for its unveiling at St. Luke's Churchyard in Cradley Heath in November. Email mr.l.perry@googlemail.com or call 07710 379 000. Alongside this article is a picture of the real Eric Atwood. It is a black and white photo, and it is of a man with one hand on his hip, the other leaning against a wall of some kind. He is wearing a white working shirt or top with a tea towel or towel hanging round his neck. He seems to be working in the factory, in the chain making factory. The second picture is one of the sculpture. It is gold and geometric, of a young man who is holding what appears to be a chain link with his arms held out in front of him. Much is given away as I guess they're waiting for the grand reveal, but it is captioned, "The sculpture will honour those who carried out reserve occupations." Motorists warned of months of delays during roadworks. Major works at Burnt Tree Junction will take place in phases for up to 9 months. Written by Gurdip Tandy, local Democracy reporter. Motorists have been warned that they face possible delays for up to 9 months when roadworks get underway on a busy Black Country route. A major programme of works will start on November 10th at Burnt Tree Junction in Dudley on the border of Sandwell, with the aim of improving bus journey times and facilities for walkers and cyclists. Work taking place on the key route will be carried out in phases during the coming months. During the programme, some bus stops may be suspended, with the main services affected being the 74, 87 and 126. Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, bosses said other bus services might be affected by delays during the project, with people being advised to plan ahead and allow more time for their journeys. Other works will include lane closures, installation of temporary traffic lights for certain phases of work, and the suspension of buslands and pedestrian crossings and walkways. Burnt Tree Junction will remain open to pedestrians and cyclists, and people are urged to follow all signed routes through the works area for their own safety. And drivers are being advised to avoid travelling through the junction and use alternative routes where possible to reduce congestion in the area. TFWM said, "A large investment programme is taking place in the borough of Dudley. A number of key projects have already been completed, with construction for further projects in the town centre and surrounding areas taking place alongside each other over the next couple of years. MMA tram construction activity will continue throughout 2025, and the old Dudley bus station site is undergoing a significant redevelopment to become the modern and sustainable Dudley bus interchange." Highway works are also taking place at Burnt Tree Junction to improve bus journey times and help those walking and cycling around the main roads in this area. From the 10th of November 2025, works will begin on the highway at Burnt Tree Junction in Dudley and on the border of Sandwell. This project is part of a larger scheme to improve bus journeys and help those walking and cycling around the main roads in the area. There will be new crossing points which will improve safety and encourage better connection to existing and upcoming paths and cycleways on the A4123 and A461, as well as to Merry Hill in the future. The works will start on the 10th of November and will take place in various phases for up to 9 months, with delays to journey times for bus users and motorists. Further information on the project is available on the Transport for West Midlands website, tfwm.org.uk/plan-your-journey/major-roadworks-and-events/dudley/. You can find out more about planning applications and planned roadworks where you live at the website publicnoticeportal.uk. 3 million helping hands urgently needed. Written by Theo Chapman, contributor. How you can help charities by volunteering some of your time. Got time on your hands? Today a rallying call was made for more people to help a good cause by becoming a volunteer. Leading charities, led by Royal Voluntary Service, say they need help to meet a rising demand in services. Charities across the country anticipate a shortfall of 3 million volunteers over the next year, jeopardising essential charity services from hospices, conservation, animal welfare and local community support, according to Royal Voluntary Service. New research by Nottingham Trent University found that 44% of charities report rising requests for help, whilst one in four say they are unable to meet demand. Without additional volunteers, vulnerable communities and causes could be left without the practical and emotional support that they rely on. In response, the national charity Royal Voluntary Service is urging the public to take on volunteer roles with causes they care about. It has assembled a coalition of household name charities that are among those short of volunteers. They include Guide Dogs, Bookmark Reading Charity, Missing People, Oxfam, RNIB, Rotary Great Britain and Ireland, RSPCA, Stroke Association and the Conservation Volunteers. To welcome more people into volunteering, Royal Voluntary Service has launched a digital volunteering platform named Govo, developed using support from the Players of People's Postcode Lottery. Govo connects volunteers with flexible local and remote opportunities, making it easier to fit helping out into busy lives. Research by RVS found that 164 million additional volunteering hours could be unlocked each month if more flexible digital opportunities were available, enough to staff 631 charity shops for 25 years. Emily Jack, CEO of Bookmark Reading Charity, said, "Our one-to-one reading programme volunteers are the heart of our charity. Without their dedication, we simply couldn't help disadvantaged children transform their life stories through the power of reading. But right now, there are far more children struggling to read than we have volunteers to support them. We currently need almost 25% more volunteers to ensure every child in our partner schools gets the reading help they need to thrive. With one in four children leaving primary school unable to read well, our volunteers play a vital role in giving this generation the chance to succeed and build a brighter future." To amplify the appeal, ITV is partnering with Royal Voluntary Service on a new and ambitious campaign to inspire the nation to get volunteering. The campaign, Role of a Lifetime, will see familiar ITV faces, including Walsall's Paralympic champion swimmer Ellie Simmons, draw on their own charitable experiences and call on the nation to embrace volunteering. Encouragingly, Gen Z and millennials are taking charge, as 74% say they are actively looking for ways to support their communities. However, practical and emotional barriers are holding many of them back. Many cite lack of time, fear that opportunities may lack flexibility, or simply feel nervous about volunteering. Catherine Johnstone, CBE, Chief Executive of Royal Voluntary Service, said, "Britain's charities are facing an unprecedented volunteer shortfall, and vital services risk being unable to meet growing needs. Charities are standing together like never before, but they cannot do it alone. Volunteering is essential. Every contribution, no matter how much time someone can give, helps sustain services, provide support, and make a real difference to causes and communities." The new digital volunteering platform Govo makes it easy to find flexible opportunities locally or remotely. Now is the moment to step forward, get involved, and help us show what we can achieve when charities and communities unite. More than 3,000 charities from across the country are signed up to Govo, and local and regional charities in a range of cause areas are also standing with RVS to deliver the urgent call for volunteers. Anyone inspired to get involved, explore flexible volunteering opportunities, and see the difference they can make, visit govo.org. That's govo.org. Alongside this article is an image of three volunteers. They seem to be in a garden somewhere, but the background isn't in focus. It is three women. The one on the left is wearing gardening gloves with a plant in her hand. She has curly hair and has closed her eyes because she is smiling so big. The woman in the centre has equally curly hair, an orange high-vis jacket on and a blue lanyard, and is holding a clipboard of some sort and is also laughing. And the one on the furthest right is also laughing. She has straighter hair, a bowl hat on, and is holding what appears to be clippers or shears. It's captioned, Volunteering can be a great way to use your spare time for good and make new friends. Picture Royal Voluntary Service. Car parts and stolen vehicles found in raid on storage site, written by Paul Jenkins. Two men were arrested on suspicion of modern slavery offences after stolen vehicles and car parts were discovered by police at a storage site in Sandwell. Heading onto a site in Ann Road, Smethwick, earlier this month, the teams on Operation Alliance were met with car parts piled high, countless storage units, mountains of scrap, and even living quarters discovered housing people in small spaces. Officers from the Sandwell Priority Crime Team joined forces with the Environment Agency, the National Vehicle Crime Intelligence Service, NAVCIS, Policing's National Intelligence Units for Serious Organised Exquisitive Crime, Sandwell Council, West Midlands Fire Service, Immigration Enforcement, and BT, as part of the operation. Acting on intelligence, the teams opened each of the units to find stacks of vehicle parts, including some belonging to two high-value stolen vehicles. With the help from one of the force's vehicle examiners, the two stolen vehicles were recovered and one suspected stolen vehicle. Seizing the parts and vehicles, multiple arrests were also made. Two men, aged 23 and 65, were both arrested on suspicion of modern slavery offences. Both have been bailed whilst police investigations continue. 11 people were arrested for immigration matters. The enforcement follows a multi-agency intensification week held nationwide to tackle vehicle crime. Forces and partners from across the country worked together to disrupt the theft of motor vehicles, supply chains, and gather intelligence to put a stop to those committing vehicle crime. Sergeant Mike Bradley, who led on the warrant, said this was a complex location. We wouldn't have been able to tackle all of the issues without the help of our partners and this joint approach. All of the teams played their own parts, and by working together, we were able to make multiple arrests and discover stolen vehicles whilst also disrupting criminal activity. We know vehicle crime is something that affects not just individuals, but wider communities and businesses. You may think it's just criminals stealing cars, but it's much more than this, and often forms part of much wider criminal activity. Vehicle crime can be linked to organised crime groups, which is why operations like this are so important to disrupt the criminals' activity. Our investigation into this site is continuing, and we are continuing to work with partners. Alongside this article is a picture of the storage site. Three car engines, which I can't even begin to describe, are they're huge and full of cogs and pipes and wires. They're three huge car engines stacked on top of piles of metal junk in the corner of what seems to be an abandoned alleyway. The caption is, "Car engines stacked high were discovered during the operation."
Hello everybody, this is Pam, reading some articles from the Express and Star dated Saturday, the 1st of November. Leading councillor vents frustration at Midland Metro delay. A leading Dudley councillor says he is frustrated with delays to Midlands Metro construction after hearing the project called a debacle. Councillor Simon Phipps, Dudley Cabinet Member for Infrastructure, was speaking at October's meeting of full council where he faced complaints from a senior fellow Conservative. Former Mayor and Cabinet Member Councillor Ian Kettle told councillors congestion was an enormous problem in the borough and completion of the metro would be part of the solution. Councillor Kettle said, "Having spent nearly £500 million on creating a scheme to come into Brierley Hill, we find the levels in Level Street were not right and also promised we would see them using the scheme in late summer. The metro seems to be one debacle after another. When are we going to see the metro running properly?" Councillor Pete Lowe from the Black Country Party used his opportunity to ask Cabinet members a question to also call for answers about when the Metro would be running to bring a boost to Dudley's economy. Councillor Phipps said, "I completely agree that we should be frustrated by the delays we have seen from the Midlands Metro Alliance and Combined Authority project. It has not only added to congestion, but raised no end of disruption for people visiting Dudley Town Centre, people working and businesses running in the town too. We should hold them to account, and we have been doing so strenuously." Councillor Phipps told councillors he expected construction to be complete by the end of the year, and after a period of testing and driver training, passengers should be able to use the link from Wensbury to Maryhill in the spring. Road users will face congestion around Burntree Island from November the 10th, when a 9-month programme of roadworks gets underway. A Transport for West Midlands spokesperson said, "This project is part of a larger scheme to improve bus journey times and help those walking and cycling around the main roads in the area." Winter coughs and colds, or could it be signs of pneumonia? Coughs and colds are rife this time of year, but how can you tell when they might be a sign of something more serious, like pneumonia? To help clarify the signs, we spoke to Dr. Claire Agathou, co-founder of the A to Z General Practice at the Wellington Hospital, part of HCA Healthcare UK, who explained exactly what pneumonia is, what its key symptoms are, and when to seek medical advice. What is pneumonia? Pneumonia is an infection of the lungs which causes inflammation in the tiny air sacs in the lungs, which are called alveoli, which then fill with fluid or pus, explains Agathou. This makes it much harder for oxygen to pass into the bloodstream, which leads to coughing, breathlessness, and fever. It can affect just one lung or sometimes both and ranges from mild to life-threatening. According to Asthma and Lung UK, there were 518,525 hospital admissions for pneumonia alone in England last year, and almost a fifth of these patients were readmitted again after 30 days. What causes it? Pneumonia is most often caused by bacteria called Streptococcus pneumoniae, but viruses and less commonly fungi can also trigger it. We often call this an atypical pneumonia, says Agathou. Pneumonia can develop after a viral illness like a flu, when the immune system is really run down or when bacteria is inhaled into the lungs. How can I tell if my cough is likely to be from pneumonia versus from a viral infection or allergies? Are there any key differences to look out for? Typically, a more viral or an allergic cough tends to be on the drier side. Sometimes, if it's viral, it's also linked to a sore throat or feeling a bit congested, and usually improves itself after a week or two, says Agathou. However, she highlights that pneumonia coughs are typically productive, i.e. bring up mucus or phlegm. Are there any other symptoms? Another big thing to look out for is chest pain or pain when breathing out, highlights Agathou. Another common symptom that we see, particularly in older adults, is confusion. In addition, when you've got a pneumonia, you may pass much less urine and tend to be dehydrated. So these are some other things to look out for. Who is more at risk? It is possible for anyone to develop pneumonia, and many healthy adults recover well with antibiotics, says Agathou. However, the rates are much higher in vulnerable communities, so in the elderly or people with reduced immune function or respiratory conditions. When should you go to a GP? If you've got a cough that's just lingering and persisting after 5 to 7 days, you should be seen by a doctor, advises Agathou. But irrespective of time frame, if you have a really severe cough, feel really unwell, and start to feel that your breathing is off the norm, then I would get checked out very quickly by a GP. How is pneumonia diagnosed? We check your oxygen levels, your breathing rate, your temperature, your pulse, and all of these things that can indicate to us how severe the infection is, explains Agathu. If it's a typical pneumonia, antibiotics and fluids are the primary sources management, says Agathu. Oral antibiotics are usually prescribed. However, the most severe cases need hospital care, oxygen support and fluid. For more information, visit asthmaandlung.org.uk/withyouthiswinter. Cake artist's life-sized thriller tribute to Michael Jackson. A cake artist has thrilled Michael Jackson fans on Halloween after unveiling an edible 6-feet-tall creation celebrating one of his most famous looks. Emma Jane Morris, aged 55, from South Wales, has spent 6 weeks making the intricate piece, which faithfully recreates the King of Pop's get-up from the spooky 1983 smash hit, from his curls right down to his shoes, for the Cake International show at the NEC, which started yesterday, so that was the 31st of October, and showcases the biggest and best of the baking world. Mother of three, Emma Jane, who has previously created life-size cake figures such as the King in 2023, the year of his coronation, and Queen Elizabeth I in 2024, decided to mark the cake exhibition's Halloween start date by recreating the pop star's famous look from the horror-themed music video. She said, "We've all grown up with the King of Pop, and I thought it was just a lovely thing to do, and especially falling on Halloween. The first day of the show is Halloween, and we've chosen the thriller era, so everything just seemed to fit in. It has an international appeal as well. Most people that have walked up to us today have said, 'Oh, we love him.' It was a no-brainer. My husband Owain and I are dressed up as zombies, so we look totally ridiculous next to him, but we tried to get into the feel of it. I've been just walking back and forth, and all you can hear is people saying, 'Michael Jackson, Michael Jackson.' So it's definitely making an impact, and that goes a long way," she said. The huge creation made the 3-hour journey from her studio in Aberdare to Birmingham for the show, and Emma Jane also created tombstones to showcase in her booth alongside Jackson to create an eerie atmosphere. His head, which took Emma Jane a week to put together as she painstakingly recreated his likeness, is made of Rice Krispies, modelling chocolate and sugar paste. Emma Jane said she was thrilled that he made it to the show in one piece after a 6-week process from research and planning to the final finish. She said, "I made his head separately to the body, so the head we took off to travel with and it went on a board, so it was quite safe. The body, we had to hire a big van with a tail lift and it travelled on its back lying down because even though it's got an armature, a framework in it, it wouldn't take the rocking to get here. It got here really, really well. I just had a little bit of damage on the back of the lapel, but other than that, he got here perfectly." She added, "There's a lot of work and effort and planning that goes into every feature that we do. I just took my time with it. The head is the most important part because you've got to get the likeness of the person." And this article is accompanied by a picture of the Michael Jackson cake where he's dressed all in red. He's got his arms up in the air with clenched fists as if he's singing or perhaps screaming, "Ah!" And there is Emma Jane standing next to him looking like a zombie in torn clothing, plus, as described, a tombstone as well in the background, and they're standing obviously in what's supposed to be a graveyard. An interesting picture. This is a recipe from the weekend section of the Express and Star, and a very tasty and hopefully fairly simple recipe it is too. I must say that the picture that accompanies it looks delicious, with these sweet potatoes filled with a yummy, you can tell I'm hungry, a yummy creamy sauce. And they've got lots of olive oil around them. It just looks delicious. So this is a recipe for sweet potatoes, goat's cheese and creme fraiche. And it's from the restaurant Gaucho. This Gaucho classic does everything it can to celebrate versatile and delicious sweet potatoes, which appear frequently in various forms in Argentinian cooking. The ingredients for four people are 4 sweet potatoes, 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil plus extra to garnish, 150 grams of goat's cheese crumbled, so it would be a hard goat's cheese, 100 grams of creme fraiche, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped chives, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped flat leaf parsley, and sea salt and black pepper. So this is the method. Heat your oven to 220 degrees C or 200 degrees C fan. Pierce each sweet potato several times with a fork. Place the potatoes on a baking tray. Drizzle with the oil and rub them to coat them evenly. Then sprinkle them lightly with sea salt. Bake the sweet potatoes for about 45 to 60 minutes or until they are tender when pierced with a fork. While the potatoes are baking, in a small bowl combine the goat's cheese, creme fraiche and half of the chopped chives. Season the mixture with sea salt and black pepper to taste. Set aside. Once the sweet potatoes are baked, remove them from the oven and let them cool slightly. Cut a slit down the centre of each sweet potato, being careful not to cut all the way through, and gently open them to create space for the filling. Spoon the goat's cheese and creme fraiche mixture into the centre of each sweet potato. Sprinkle the remaining chopped chives and all the parsley evenly over the top. Serve immediately, garnished with a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil and a grinding of black pepper if desired. Yummy.
Albion match report. West Bromwich Albion were held to a goalless draw by Championship bottom club Sheffield Wednesday at the Hawthorns. The Baggies dominated possession but could not find a breakthrough, with Wednesday's goalkeeper Ethan Horvath making a string of good saves. A week on from going into administration and incurring a 12-point deduction, the Owls ended a run of 4 straight defeats with this stalemate. It is a 3rd successive game without a win for Albion, who missed the chance to go level on points with 6th-place Stoke and were booed off by some of the supporters. The hosts started with real purpose and went close twice in the first 5 minutes as Mikey Johnston forced Horvath into action before Isaac Price fired over. Horvath reacted well again on 20 minutes, denying Alex Mowat at full stretch after he fired goalwards from the edge of the area. The keeper then did well to deny Josh Madger at the back post from a deep corner before Johnston shot wide from distance as the Baggies ramped up the pressure before half-time. After a passive start in the second half, Wednesday's EK Ugbo could have punished slack play in the Albion midfield on a quick break, but his shot was tame. Owls midfielder Liam Palmer then skied an effort inside the area after a long throw fell kindly for him, as although the home side dominated the ball, their lack of cutting edge always left the door open for Wednesday. Horvath again kept the score level inside the last 10 minutes, holding on to a stray ball after Dominic Iorfa diverted a dangerous cross. Baggies striker Carlin Grant also squandered 2 late opportunities as the visitors held out for a first point since the end of September. Ryan Mason said it was disappointing not to win. The performance in the second half was a little disjointed. we rushed things and played a little bit on edge. Tough to accept. The first half for 25 minutes, I thought we played a really good game. We had loads of final third entries, loads of moments. I understand the first goal is crucial, and the longer the game was 0-0, there was probably a bit of anxiety. The energy shifted and we needed to learn from that and be disciplined and do what we need to do for 95 minutes. Every game in this league is demanding and challenging. We had so many moments and that didn't materialise, and we need to improve on that.
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 3rd of November. Pair jailed for a total of 20 years for firing shotgun at bedroom window. A gunman who blasted a shotgun at an Albury home has been jailed alongside a woman he convinced to be his getaway driver and hold a gun for safekeeping. In the early hours of February 17th, a black Hyundai drove off Vicarage Street, Albury, before Hassan Hussein emptied two barrels of a shotgun at the bedroom windows of a home. The mother and two sisters who were at home were terrified they would all be killed and still have no idea why their house was targeted. Despite a convoluted escape plan, which involved swapping cars and driving to Wales, Hussein was arrested in Birmingham. Seema Khan's house was also raided, where police found a loaded pistol with ammunition in a handbag. Khan, of Navigation Road, Birmingham, was charged with assisting an offender and possession of a firearm. Hussein, of Edgbaston Road, Birmingham, was charged with possession of a firearm with intent to endanger life. They were both found guilty following a trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court. Judge Robert Tagalog Davis jailed the pair on Friday. The court heard impact statements from the woman who were in the house when Hussein opened fire. The woman in her 20s said, "I have no idea why this happened. The window shattered with the first shot. My sister was covered with glass and could have been killed. I do not feel safe in my own home and I'm always looking at the cameras in case it happens again." In mitigation, the court heard Hussein was married and suffered from Crohn's disease, and Khan had been a child bride and had been the victim of abuse for years. She also has two children. Hussein had previous firearm convictions. In 2018, he was sentenced to 8 years for gun crimes. Judge Talog Davis jailed him for 15 years. He said, "You still have not extended the courtesy of giving the family whose family home you shot at a reason why you did it. You have previous convictions and these aggravated your offending." Khan was sentenced to 5 years and 6 months. Arrest made after cannabis plant seized. A man was arrested and dozens of cannabis plants discovered after an early morning raid on a Samwell house. Officers from Samwell Police executed the warrant at a house in Cypress Gardens in Yew Tree in West Bromwich on Tuesday and found 60 cannabis plants and growing equipment, as well as finding that the electricity meter had been bypassed to power the grow. A 28-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of cultivating cannabis and abstracting electricity and has been bailed pending further inquiries. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "Dozens of cannabis plants have been recovered after officers executed a warrant at an address in Sandwell. On Tuesday morning, officers forced entry to an address on Cypress Gardens, Yew Tree. Inside, we found around 60 cannabis plants and growing equipment. The electricity meter had also been bypassed to power the grow." A 28-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of cultivating cannabis, abstracting electricity. He has been bailed pending further inquiries. If you have any information, please call 101, quoting 20/424298/25. Hospices need to be part of NHS. Charity Chief writes exclusively for Express and Star as cash crisis goes on. an article by Mark Drew, editor. Hospices must become part of the NHS if they are to survive, with guaranteed funding to allow them to care for patients in their time of need. That is the demand today from Toby Porter, a former boss of Acorns Hospice, who is now in charge of Hospice UK. Mr. Porter today writes for the Express and Star to raise his fears for hospices in our region, as they are forced to deal with repeated financial pressures. The organisations provide vital palliative care, both at their centres and in the community, offering vital medical help and support to families. But they are not given a sustained or regular income from central government, instead having to rely on short-term grants that do not allow them to plan for the future. And there have been many cases of hospices running short, with recent redundancies at St Giles Hospice in Lichfield. The Express and Star has campaigned for change with its Fair Deal for Hospices campaign. Mr Porter was in charge of the Acorns Hospice in 2019 when it found a £2 million hole in its finances. It announced the closure of its Walsall Hospice, but an appeal supported by the Express and Star was successful in saving it, and it continues to care for children with life-limiting conditions. Mr Porter says, "It remains one of my happiest memories and most important achievements of my career that the Walsall Hospice continues to this day to serve the children and families in need across the Black Country, and is so well loved and well supported with that vital task by their local community. But sadly, many hospices are still facing huge financial challenges. I sadly know all too well from my time at Acorns when hospice services are well funded and when they are not." Mr Porter said it was time to be honest about steps needed to protect hospices. He said, "If the government and the NHS don't act now and commit to properly funding hospices, the consequences will be profound, not only for the sector, but for patients and families who rely on hospices' vital services. Hospices are a key part of our healthcare system, whether in patient units or in people's homes. They relieve suffering, support families and help people live well until the end of their life. Currently, they depend overwhelmingly on the generosity of fundraisers in the local community. Since April last year, 20 hospices have made major cuts, including St Giles and Birmingham hospices." Mr Porter's message comes as official figures show hospices have been forced to cut back services for people who are dying due to multi-million pound funding deficits. The National Audit Office says nearly two-thirds of independent hospices in England reported a deficit in 2023/24. At the end of 2024, around 300 inpatient beds were deregistered or withdrawn from operation, the report states, though some of these could have been due to a preference for being cared for at home. Experts said the report highlights the inconsistency and insufficiency in how hospices are funded. In 2023-24, around 29% of income for hospices was through government funding. Most income for hospices is generated from charitable sources, such as charity shops and donations, according to the NAO report. Mr Porter is calling for full funding from government and for hospices to be given proper NHS contracts that give them long-term stability. He also says hospice staff should have wage rises linked to those given to NHS staff. He added, "We must act now. Hospice services should be recognised as an essential part of the health system, and the skilled workforce that delivers this care must be treated on equal terms with their NHS counterparts." Hunt as defibrillator and bleed kit stolen. Police are hunting a man after a bleed kit and defibrillator were stolen in West Bromwich. West Midlands Police want to speak to the man after a bleed kit and defibrillator were stolen from outside a store on Hilltop, West Bromwich. An image issued by the force can be seen at expressandstar.com. Officers say that the theft happened just before 12:10 a.m. on September the 10th. A spokesperson for West Midlands Police said, "If you know him, please call 101 or contact us via live chat, quoting reference number 20/388029/25.
Welcome back to the Express and Star pub quiz. And this week's round, it's connections. Question one. What name was given to an ancient ruler of Egypt? Question two. What is the name of the upcoming third movie in James Cameron's Avatar series? Question 3. Which singer has topped the UK charts with Espresso, Taste and Please, Please, Please? Question 4. In punctuation, what name is given to the solid dot that separates items in a list? Question 5. Which fish can stun their prey by delivering shocks of up to 860 volts? Question 6. What was the first novel in Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson and the Olympians series? Question 7. Which late singer and actor had the birth name Marvin Lee Adday? Question 8. Which restaurant chain was set up in 1983 to compete with Beefeater and Bernie in chains? Question 9. Which charitable organisation was founded in 1865 as the East London Christian Mission? And question 10. What connects all the answers above? How's your connections knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the connections round. What name was given to an ancient ruler of Egypt? Pharaoh. Question 2. What is the name of the upcoming third movie in James Cameron's Avatar series? Fire and Ash. Question 3. Which singer has topped the UK charts with Espresso, Taste and Please, Please, Please? Sabrina Carpenter. Question 4. In punctuation, what name is given to the solid dot that separates items in a list? Bullet point. Question 5. Which fish can stun their prey by delivering shocks of up to 860 volts? The electric eel. Question 6. What was the first novel in Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson and the Olympians series? The Lightning Thief. Question 7. Which late singer and actor had the birth name Marvin Lee Adday? Meatloaf. Question 8. Which restaurant chain was set up in 1983 to compete with Beefeater and Bernie in chains? The Harvester. Question 9. Which charitable organisation was founded in 1865 as the East London Christian Mission? The Salvation Army. And question 10. What connects all the answers above? They are all a species of ant. Pharaoh, fire, ash, carpenter, bullet, electric, thief, meat, harvester, and army. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye.
Dear friend, SVICIO Annual Forum on 17 November 2025. Annual Forum from 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Monday, 17th November. Refreshments will be served on arrival and at mid-morning, with lunch at 1:15 p.m. The day will include opening address by the Mayor of Sandwell, Councillor Steve Melia, SVI Annual Meeting Business, guest speakers Sarah Ann Cromwell and Barry Lane, with a range of interesting and informative exhibitors. The day is also an opportunity to catch up with old friends and meet new ones.
We must now be clear about how your information is used and the steps we take to ensure it is secure. When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database, and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs, and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Diane, welcoming you to your audio-described TV programmes starting Saturday 8th and ending Friday 14th of November 2025. This has been written this week by Christine. So, starting with Saturday, Channel 4 kicks off with three episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond from 8:10 p.m., followed by two helpings of Frasier from 9:35 and two episodes of The Simpsons from 11:05. James Martin's Great British Adventure is at 11:40 on ITV, this episode from his home county of Yorkshire. Your Saturday afternoon options start with Rick Stein's Cornwall at 12 noon on BBC Two, followed by Mary at 90, A Lifetime of Cooking at 12:30. George Clark's Amazing Spaces is at 2:05, followed by Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It at 4:15, both on Channel 4. Meanwhile, over on BBC Two, Alison Hammond's Florida Unpacked series continues at 1:00, and there are two afternoon film choices, The Robe on BBC Two and James Bond classic GoldenEye on ITV, both at 1:30. There's also another film, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, which starts at 4 on ITV. In the evening, there's a new series of Celebrity Race Across the World at 5 on BBC Two, followed by the award-winning film about Churchill, The Darkest Hour, at 6. It's the final of the Great British Bake Off over on Channel 4 at 5:15. Then on BBC One, you have Strictly Come Dancing at 6:25. There's another celebrity special, this time Quiz Game The Chase at 6:55 on ITV, followed by The 1% Club at 8 p.m. Bettany Hughes' Treasures of the World is at 7 on Channel 4, this episode exploring the diverse heritage of the Greek island of Rhodes, followed by a two-part series, Titanic Secrets of the Shipwreck, at 8 and 9. Your evening programmes conclude with the music of Little Mix and Sugar Babes in Girl Bands Forever at 9 on BBC Two, and a late night film on Channel 4, T2 Trainspotter, the sequel to Danny Boyle's darkly comedic drama. Now on to Sunday. Channel 4 has its usual run of American comic series starting at 8:05 a.m. with two lots of Everybody Loves Raymond and finishing with two episodes of The Simpsons from 1 o'clock with two helpings of Frasier in between. Foodies can enjoy Nadia's British Food Adventure at 11:30 and The Great Food Guys at 12, both on BBC Two. Over on ITV, it's documentary series Fletcher's Family Farm at 11:30 and BBC One gives you Hamza's Hidden Wild Isles at 2:40. It's a Sunday afternoon and early evening film fest with ITV offering spy comedy film Johnny English Reborn at 2:20. BBC One has Kensuke's Kingdom at 3:40, where a young boy is shipwrecked on a remote island. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 features on ITV at 4:10, and sci-fi comedy Men in Black airs at 6:10 on Channel 4. If there's nothing for you there, you have George Clark's Old House, New Home at 4:40 on Channel 4 and Eva Longoria, Searching for Spain at 5:20 on BBC Two. Sunday evening options include Kingdom at 6:20 on BBC One, featuring the battle between leopards, hyenas, wild dogs and lions to claim a rich corner of Zambia as their home. BBC One's Strictly Come Dancing, The Results, is at 7:10 and BBC Two has The World's Most Dangerous Roads at 7:15. The Search for Britain's Best Knitter continues on Channel 4 at 8, whilst ITV features a charity darts challenge in Bullseye, also at 8. 9 o'clock gives you Trigger Point on ITV, Riot Women on BBC One, Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing on BBC Two and the start of a new drama series, Trespasses, on Channel 4, which features a young Catholic teacher falling for a married Protestant barrister against the backdrop of the Troubles in Belfast. Nightwatch is at 9:30 on BBC Two and the Real Hack documentary series continues at 10:15 on ITV, followed by Playtime Fresh Cuts 2025 at 11:20 and TikTok Murder Gone Viral at 11:50 p.m. There are also two evening film choices for you. On BBC Two at 10:50, it's First World War drama 1917, and on ITV at 11:45, revenge thriller Man on Fire. Now for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. Channel 4 has a triple helping of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:50 a.m. and four episodes of Frasier from 9:10 a.m. BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:05 and in the afternoon there's Find It, Fix It, Flog It on Channel 4 at 1:10 and Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV at 2 p.m. The regular soaps are Emmerdale at 7:30 on ITV every weeknight except Thursday when it's the England v Serbia football match. EastEnders on 7:30 on BBC One every weeknight except Friday. And Coronation Street, 8 o'clock Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Now on to Monday. Channel 4 gives us Secrets of Super Cheap Shopping at 8, followed by episode 2 of the drama series Trespasses at 9. There's a film choice on BBC One at 8 p.m. The biopic Mr. Burton, whilst over on ITV, the Trigger Point series on ITV and BBC Two's Once Upon a Time in Space are both at 9. At 10, you have Leonard and Hungry Paul on BBC Two, and two episodes of 24 Hours in A&E on Channel 4. There are two episodes of Tell Me Lies from 11:10 on BBC One, and on BBC Two, David Olusoga tells the story of the British Empire in a new series starting at 11. Channel 4 completes your evening choices with Breaking Ranks Inside Israel's War at 10:45, followed by Heathrow, Britain's busiest airport, at 11:50. Now for Tuesday. BBC One takes us on a bargain hunt at 12:20 p.m. and there's an afternoon film on BBC Two at 3 p.m. Second World War drama In Which We Serve. Mary Berry's A Lifetime of Cooking series continues on BBC Two at 7:30, followed by the final episode of Digging for Britain at 8. Also at 8, it's Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon on BBC One and The Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer on Channel 4. At 9, there's the final part of TikTok Murder Gone Viral on ITV, and at 9:45 we're on The World's Most Dangerous Roads on BBC Two. On Channel 4 at 9, there's the third episode of Trespasses, followed by Gogglebox at 10 and Celebrity Gogglebox at 11:05. Artist Cornelia Parker is the subject of a documentary, In My Own Words, at 10:40 on BBC One, and James Bond's spy adventure, Goldeneye, is at 10:45 on ITV. The Highland Cop series completes your evening choices at 11 on BBC Two. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. Bargain Hunt is at 12:15 on 1 and Florida, America's Animal Paradise, is at 2:30 p.m. on BBC Two. Your 8 o'clock options are BBC One's The Repair Shop, Channel 4's Grand Designs, and the final part of Simon Reeve's Tropic of Cancer on BBC Two. At 9, you have the final episode of Trespasses on Channel 4, documentary Murder, Smoke and Lies on ITV, the second part of Shetland on BBC One, and a documentary about the life of Richard Burton, Wild Genius, on BBC Two. Britain's Most Expensive Houses features on Channel 4 at 10, followed by Building Monaco's Superhomes at 11:05. On BBC One at 10:40, Like Father, Like Son is a documentary following Chris Eubank Jr. and his former world champion boxer father as they reunite after years apart. There's also a late night film choice at 11:30 on BBC Two, The Green Book. Now on to Thursday. The celebrities continue to race across the world at 8 o'clock on BBC One, whilst on BBC Two it's Highland Cops, and on Channel 4, George Clark's Remarkable Renovations. At 9 o'clock, there is BBC One's DIY SOS Children in Need special. The team this time helping children's cancer support charity, the Joshua Tree. They carry out a major expansion scheme. You also have BBC Two's The Ridge and Channel 4's Taskmaster, the final. Once Upon a Time in Space is at 11 on BBC Two, and your late night film is Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, at 11:20 on ITV. And finally, Friday. BBC One gives you Bargain Hunt at 12:15 and Hope Street at 2 p.m. And there's an afternoon film on BBC Two at 2:45, Second World War drama The Wooden Horse. It's Children in Need Night on BBC One from 7 p.m. through until 10. Meanwhile, on BBC Two, there's Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing, and on Channel 4, Unreported World, both at 7:30. At 9, David Olusoga's series about the British Empire continues on BBC Two, and it's Gogglebox on Channel 4. Champions Full Gallop continues on ITV at 10:45, and there are two film choices for you. Romantic comedy Bridget Jones's Diary at 10:40 on BBC One, and crime comedy Gringo at 11 on BBC Two. That's it for this week. We do hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
DNF Soundings.
Now, for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, November 8th, Under Milk Wood, celebrating the 100th anniversary of Richard Burton's birth. It's the original 1954 recording. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 on Saturday lunchtime. There's drama in the afternoon, The Keys to the Kingdom, written by Nick Deer. A once influential film director fights to save his reputation. Radio 4, 3 p.m. Opera on 3 on Saturday night is The Magic Flute from the Royal Opera House in London. Radio 3, 6 p.m. And the Festival of Remembrance, also from London, the Royal Albert Hall. Highlights from the event. Radio 2, 8 o'clock with Paddy O'Connell. On to Sunday, November 9th. And it is Remembrance Sunday. So there will be a ceremony at the Cenotaph. It'll be live on Radio 4 from 10:30 in the morning. And the majority of radio stations, including Classic FM, will also take the silence at 11 a.m. So Remembrance Sunday, service from the Cenotaph, Radio 4, 10:30. Lots of celebrations for Jane Austen this year, and Northanger Abbey, one of her less famous books, and the dramatisation part 2 this Sunday afternoon, Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. Desert Island Discs is revisited with June Whitfield, Radio 4 Extra at 5 o'clock. On to programmes then that are serialised Monday to Friday. So same time, same radio station, each day, Monday to Friday. Murder at the Vicarage, broadcast as part of the 100th anniversary of June Whitfield's birth. We mentioned her for one of the highlights on Sunday. So you can hear more of her with Murder at the Vicarage, Miss Marple, 11 a.m. all week, or 5 p.m. Radio 4 Extra. The Everest Obsession, personal stories of climbing Everest, 11:45 in the morning or 12:30 at night on Radio 4. Composer of the Week, Elfriede André, 4 o'clock, Radio 3. All week, Monday to Friday, 10:45 in the evening, Radio 4, and The Accident Report. That's Book of the Week, The Accident Report, 10:45 all week, on Radio 4. On to the rest of the highlights, starting with Monday, November 10th, and our focus on June Whitfield continues. Extracts from the actress's autobiography, 1:30 on Monday on Radio 4 Extra. And as a little bonus, same time, Tuesday and Wednesday, 1:30, Radio 4 Extra, June Whitfield reading from her autobiography. Back to Monday, November 10th, and I'm sorry I haven't a clue. The panel game is on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. There's a huge winter ahead, although it'll be summer in Australia, as England take on Australia in the Ashes. There's a huge discussion on it, previewing the first test. 5 Live Cricket, 9 o'clock, Radio 5 Live, on Monday evening, 9 p.m. Tuesday, November 11th, and June Whitfield Week continues. A programme that was recorded 10 years ago, 90 Not Out, Radio 4 Extra, at 10:30 in the morning. Drama on Tuesday is Tipping Point. Can an architect's dream save her Middle Eastern nation? 2:15, Tuesday afternoon, Radio 4. History's Toughest Heroes is narrated by Ray Winston. And in this episode, where they focus on adventurers, rebels and survivors, it's all about a World War I hellfighter. Henry Johnson was a World War I American soldier who fought off a German party by himself. Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Tuesday afternoon. Now more drama, The Snow Goose by Paul Gallico is on Radio 4 Extra on Tuesday afternoon at 3. Mark Steele's in town in the Shetland Islands at 6:30 on Radio 4 Tuesday evening. While Radio 3 in concert has works by Haydn and Schumann. Radio 3, 7:30 p.m. Tuesday night. And as it is a Tuesday, the latest news and information for the blind and partially sighted. In Touch with Peter White at 8:40 p.m. Radio 4. While The Jazz Show with Jamie Cullum is on Radio 2 at 9. Wednesday, November 12th. Let's talk about the drama in the afternoon. Undercover, Make It Count. It's a thriller. It's part 2 of 3. It's on Radio 4 at 2:15 on Wednesday afternoon. The first of a new comedy, Unite, part 1 out of 6, Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert has works by Sibelius and Vaughan Williams on Radio 3 at 7:30. The Moral Maze with Michael Burke always looks at aspects of a topical issue. This week, no change there. 8 o'clock on Radio 4 on Wednesday night. Followed by The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe. 9 o'clock, Radio 2. Thursday, November 13th. And Great Lives, Jack Thackeray, is on at Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. on Thursday morning. Well, Scam Secrets. A fraud investigator uncovers scam tactics, something that all of us should be aware of. Radio 4, just after the midday news on Thursday. Classical Live on Radio 3 has works by Bernstein, Strauss and Liszt. 1 o'clock, Radio 3, Thursday afternoon. If you prefer your drama on a Thursday afternoon, Smoke and Mirrors. A former spy who worked for the French Resistance prepares to perform in a Soho club. 2:15 for this, Radio 4, Thursday afternoon. Ramblings with Claire Baldwin on the Gower Peninsula in Wales. Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. Alternatively, some drama, The Good Soldier, Radio 4 Extra at the same time. Loose Ends with Clive Anderson is on Radio 4 at 9 p.m, while The Country Show is on Radio 2 at 9. Finally, Friday, November 14th, and the drama Murder on Mars is a sci-fi thriller. It's part one of five. It's on Radio 4 at 2:15 on Friday afternoon. The Naked Week is a wry look at the week's news in the comedy slot on Radio 4 at 6:30. Add to playlist a musical journey from Rimsky-Korsakov to Woodstock. Radio 4, 7:15, Friday night. While Anna Sapwood's choral classics are on Classic FM at 9 p.m. on Friday evening. Alternatively, you can finish your week with Free Thinking, a discussion of revenge during Armistice Week. 9 p.m, Radio 4, on Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, this is Kate and I'll be reading you some articles from the Express and Star. The 4th of November, debrief. Fans' frustrations clear, Albion must sharpen up. Albion were unable to find a way through bottom side Sheffield Wednesday on another frustrating afternoon. Here are some of the latest talking points in the debrief. Albion supporters had precious little to get excited about in the sleepy early kick-off. Ryan Mason's side were bright for 5 or 10 minutes but faded badly. Many inside the Hawthorns felt the hosts, with whom there were expectations and onus to beat the bottom side, did not have the urgency to get forward and make the difference. Grumbles of discontent at half-time became louder groans in the second half and the full-time boos were not held back. It was Josh Madger's turn to lead the line over Orne Hegerbo for just a third start since his injury return and first 90 minutes, which is progress. But Madger, perhaps understandably to a point, did not look at full fitness. He looked sluggish and to be struggling in spells. But where does the issue lie? There's not just the required service to the top end of the pitch. That does not exempt the strikers from blame, but there has to be more onus on the supporting cast. Isaac Price, Mikey Johnson, Samuel Ifling Jr. or Carlin Grant. So too Alex Mower in midfield or Callum Stiles from fullback to deliver a more front foot style. There was at least encouragement in that department as Alfie Gilchrist made his full debut, though he understandably cramped up on late. Building up the 21-year-old to a more consistent place in the side will serve Albion well. Father and son bond over music for John Lewis's Christmas campaign. John Lewis has turned into a surly teenager, given his father the Christmas gift of a memory-laden 90s vinyl for its highly anticipated festive campaign. It's the first time the department store has focused on a father and son relationship for its Christmas ad, which shows the teenager, headphones clamped to his ears, seeking to connect with his father by giving him a favourite track from his youth. Alison Limerick's 90s club hit Where Love Lives provides the soundtrack, with fellow British artist Labyrinth contributing a new version to the track. The ad created by Saatchi & Saatchi shows the father clearing up discarded wrapping paper and coming across an unopened present with a yellow sticky note marked Dad with a smiley face. He unwraps the vinyl and heads straight to his record player, with the ad cutting to him dancing in a 90s club before flashbacks show him remembering his son as a toddler and a baby. The ad ends with the two back in the family living room sharing a slightly embarrassed hug and a laugh. John Lewis brand director Rosie Hanley said, "This year's John Lewis campaign is a Christmas celebration of connection, memory and the unspoken emotions that makes the season truly magical. At John Lewis, we understand the power of a thoughtful gift, and we hope that the ad will inspire our customers to find the gift that articulates their feelings, allowing the present itself to speak volumes where words may sometimes fall short." Frankie Godwin, Chief Creative Officer at Saatchi & Saatchi, said, "Music is always the beating heart of the John Lewis campaign at Christmas, but this year it's the gift itself." And this article is supported by a photograph, I would assume, of the dad and the son in the advert. Transport bosses bid to make evening travel easier and safer. Pledges come after research finds lack of nighttime public transport in region. West Midlands transport bosses are exploring ways to make evening travel easier and safer in a bid to boost the region's nighttime economy. A new report by Aston University researcher concluded that a lack of appropriate public transport was one of the key things impacting businesses, their staff and customers. Visitor economy public transport use across the West Midlands evening economy focuses on travelling to and from evening cultural events such as concerts, theatre and gigs, and examines not just the ticket holders but also the staff who work at the venues. Key findings from the report included 40% of audiences use public transport to attend events, but only 18% use it for return journeys due to the poor late night services. Train services are also preferred for long distance travel, but are unreliable after 10 p.m, while single occupancy car use is dominant, undermining clear air zone goals. It also found employers face recruitment and retention issues due to poor transport options, while inner city transport was also seen as an issue, with smaller cities and towns isolated when it comes to the nighttime cultural engagement. Earlier this year, West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker set up a commission to look at ways of strengthening and growing the nighttime economy. A spokesperson for the West Midlands Combined Authority said, "We've worked with Aston University and the West Midlands Growth Company on this research. We'll use the findings to see how we can make travelling at night easier and safer to support our bars, restaurants, theatres and venues, as well as the region's many essential night shift workers. This work will further inform our plans as we take public control of our bus network from 2027. Public transport is crucial in delivering a safe and thriving nighttime economy for everyone." The study was written by Live Music Mapping Project and coordinated by Dr. Patricia Rusbicka, the university's senior lecturer in politics and international relations. Dr. Rusbicka said, "The key aims of this research were quantifying the use of public transport to attend regional cultural attractions in the evening, including take-up, information and safety from within and outside the West Midlands. We also examined the needs of staff who work at venues, such as their ability to return home after a night shift and whether the lack of suitable public transport makes it difficult for employers to retain evening shift staff. The study maps out the cross-regional cultural attractions and visitors' destinations against existing transport network, including the identification of gaps. Finally, we look at the environmental impact of single car travel and the alternatives such as taxis. Many events often end at 11 p.m, but there's little public transport provision at that time." Becky Frawl, head of tourism at the West Midlands Growth Company, said, "More people than ever are visiting and spending money in the West Midlands, so it's vital that the infrastructure is in place to support those who come here for a great evening out and work here too." man charged with possession of an imitation firearm. A man has been charged with possessing an imitation firearm and a robbery of a gold bracelet on Wensby Street. West Midland Police confirmed that Malachi McPherson had been charged with possession of an imitation firework, a fray and several driving offences, as well as being charged in connection with a robbery. The arrest of the 25-year-old from Wensbury comes after damage was caused to a house on Bassett Road in the town on Saturday morning, with the occupants also threatened with an imitation firearm, which was later found to be a BB gun. The second incident saw a woman robbed of a gold bracelet on Bromfield Crescent in the early hours of Saturday morning. McPherson was remanded in custody and was due to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrate Court yesterday morning. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said a man has been charged after threats were made with an imitation firearm and a woman was robbed in Wensbury. Malachi McPherson, aged 25 from Wensbury, has been charged with possession of an imitation firearm, a fray and several driving offences. This comes after damage was caused to an address on Bassett Road, Wensbury. Walking may protect you from Alzheimer's. Higher activity linked to a slower decline in memory skills. Walking for more than 5,000 steps per day may slow down cognitive decline and the build-up of a protein linked to Alzheimer's disease. Experts said that the new 14-year study is one of the first to explore the relationship between the levels of activity and key markers of Alzheimer's disease. They said the findings are also important because they suggest people who already have the earliest signs of Alzheimer's in their brains may benefit from modest amount of exercise to slow down the disease. The new study, published in the journal Nadison Experts from Harvard, analysed data from 294 people aged 50 to 90. These people had the proteins called amyloids and tau present in their brains, were not experiencing symptoms of dementia. All were taking part in the Harvard Aging Brain Study and wore pedometers to measure physical activity such as walking. They also underwent brain scans and annual cognitive assessments for up to 14 years. The study found that the higher levels of activity was linked to a slower decline in thinking and memory skills related to amyloid proteins in the brain, which can be a sign of Alzheimer's. There was a slowing in the build-up of the protein called tau, which is also seen in Alzheimer's. Even modest activity, so 3,001 to 5,000 steps a day, was linked to a notable slowing of tau, accumulation and cognitive decline, the experts said. Though 5,001 to 7,500 steps a day appeared more beneficial. Professor Tara Spires-Jones, group leader in the UK Dementia Research Institute, said further studies were needed, but added, "This study from Harvard Medical School shows taking over 5,000 steps a day is associated with slowing of cognitive decline and slowing the build-up of Alzheimer's disease pathology in the brain. The study is well conducted and the data are important advance, as they indicate that people who already have early Alzheimer's disease pathology in their brains may still benefit from taking even modest amounts of activity over 3,000 steps a day." She added, on balance, that the data in the field indicate that keeping physically active is good for your brain, but it's not a guarantee of preventing or slowing the dementia. Charles Marshall, Professor of Clinical Neurology at Queen Mary University of London, said the research could not determine whether the people were doing more exercise were also healthier in other ways, nor whether the development of Alzheimer's disease changes are influencing activity levels. But he added, "This research provides strong evidence that moderate levels of physical activity are associated with slowing progression of the early stages of Alzheimer's disease, and that this is linked to slower accumulation of the tau protein, which is an important cause of the brain cell loss." Dr. Richard Oakley, Associate Director of Research and Innovation at Alzheimer's Society, said, "The study was significant and welcomed its results." He said, "One in three people born today will develop dementia in their lifetime, but evidence shows we can reduce our risk of getting the condition. This study reinforces the message that it's good for our heart, it's also good for our head, and that being more active can support brain health. However, Because this is an observational study, we cannot draw a conclusive link between step count and changes to cognition or potential signs of Alzheimer's disease in the brain. The study followed people with raised levels of amyloid in their brain, a potential early sign of Alzheimer's, but who were not cognitively impaired. We don't know if these people went on to develop dementia or whether walking 5,000 to 1,000 steps a day might reduce the risk of or prevent the condition. We would encourage everyone to exercise regularly if they can. Other steps like eating healthily, a balanced diet, not smoking, drinking less alcohol and keeping on top of health conditions such as diabetes or high blood pressure can also reduce our risk of getting dementia. And this article was supported by a photograph of a park and people taking a walk through it. And it's got some trees with beautiful white blossom.
Albion Match Report. Charlton moved up to fifth in the championship table by beating West Brom with a goal in the sixth minute of added time. Addicks midfielder Greg Doherty had a first-half penalty save by visiting goalkeeper Josh Griffiths, and in a game of few clear-cut chances, the contest had looked destined to finish goalless. But a long-range effort from Sonny Carey, which took a deflection off substitute Chris Metham and beat the dive of Griffiths, delivered the host a late 3 points. The outcome was perhaps harsh on a West Brom side that created more than enough to win the match, but victory for last season's League One playoff winners, Charlton, extended a superb run of just one defeat in 10. The win also put another brick in the formidable defences being built by Nathan Jones and his side at the Valley, where they have lost just one match in 24. In all competitions, stretching back to December last year. West Brom will be left wondering how they came away with nothing. But in truth, while their approach, play, delivered chances, particularly in the first half, their finishing and decision-making in front of goal left plenty to be desired. Isaac Price and promising Aston Villa loanee Samuel Illing Jr. both saw efforts fly wide in the first half, in which the visitors dominated both possession and shots. Yet the best chance of the lot fell to the hosts after they were awarded a penalty where Osman Diakite was deemed to have handled under pressure from Miles Leeburn just after the half-hour mark. The midfielder argued long and hard with referee Lewis Smith, but in the end it mattered little as Doherty's telegraph spot kick was easily kept out by Griffiths diving low to his left. The second period saw more life from both sides, with Price forcing a fine save from Thomas Kaminski on 50 minutes, despite better options being available to his left. And Carey served notice 4 minutes later of what was to come with a straight snapshot from distance, which Griffiths kept out superbly, diving low to his right to tip around the near post. With the game heading into added time, a point apiece seemed fair and generally acceptable to all parties, but a corner from the left for Charlton found its way to Carey on the edge of the box. Gathering the ball and turning back towards goal, he took one last speculative swing of his boot to earn his side 3 points and spark wild celebrations with the substitutes and management team on the touchline. Ipswich secured back-to-back promotions from League One to the Premier League in 22-23 and 23-24, and while there is still a long way to go to emulate their rise, Charlton are moving in the right direction. Ryan Mason said, "It's a disappointing result and it's not good enough. I could speak all day long about the performance and positives, the moments we created, the chances we should have taken, but I don't think at the moment anyone wants to hear that. We have lost another game. The disappointment is there and it's frustrating. It is my responsibility, and at the moment I am not giving enough to the players to change that, and I need to do it. The one thing I will say is they are giving me everything and they are putting everything into it. But it's not enough at the moment. It's another one that we shouldn't have lost, but have done, and the feeling inside the dressing room is there is a lot of anger. I'm fine, it's football, and I know what it takes. I am in this position and I can handle it. But for whatever reason at the moment, the results aren't good and it's my responsibility to fix it.
DNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Vivian, and today I'll be telling you about a sight loss charity which is going to put its 160-year history on film. Since its formation in 1865, the charity has been dedicated to serving those living with visual impairment in Fife, providing them with information, skills and confidence. Today the charity supports 3,500 people with visual impairment. To help celebrate their anniversary, Seascape has received more than £40,000 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund to capture the stories and experiences of people with sight loss in the area over the past 16 decades. Visions of Hope 160 Years will use voices and images to celebrate its landmark anniversary this year, combining historical archives, personal stories and contemporary footage, ensuring the story of Fife's visually impaired community endures for future generations. It all began in 1865 when a branch of the Edinburgh Society for Teaching the Blind to Read in Their Own Homes was formed in Kirkcaldy, focusing on teaching Braille and Moontype. Moontype is a touch reading system based on the letters of the print alphabet. Many feel that it's easier to learn than Braille, especially if you've previously read print. Interestingly, schools can still borrow Moontype books for children from the Clear Vision Library in London. The Blind Persons Act of 1920 generated additional funds for the society, and a shop was opened in Kirkcaldy, where members were supported in various professions. The Society's role evolved from education to social work, with the introduction of talking book machines and innovative tools like the square handwriting frame to assist with writing in even lines. The formation of the first blind drama group in Cooper in 1963 aimed to perform at future drama festivals. A new rehabilitation centre was opened in 1985, and the provision of Moontype and Braille books was transferred to local authority libraries. The 1990s marked the Society's focus on assistive technology to support clients in living independently. The Edinburgh Society was renamed Seascape in 2018, when the charity's optician service began delivering specialist diabetic and glaucoma clinics on behalf of the NHS. This year, birthday celebrations kicked off on the 5th of September with a fundraising event featuring conversations with famous Fifers, including singer Barbara Dixon and former Prime Minister and Dunfermline MP Gordon Brown, who is now the charity's honorary president. Birthday wishes also came from Fife musicians The Proclaimers, twins Craig and Charlie Reed. Seascape plans to work with the Fife Cultural Trust and the National Library of Scotland's Moving Image Archive to create the film, which will be produced by the Glasgow-based Media Co-op, a not-for-profit, women-led workers' cooperative. The finished film will be screened at the Adam Smith Theatre in Kirkcaldy. Chief Executive Leslie Carkery said, "We are proud and excited to produce this social history film, which, thanks to support from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, will provide invaluable insights into the history of sight loss here in Fife. By documenting our evolution from Victorian-era charity to modern service provider, we'll preserve social history whilst demonstrating our ongoing relevance and innovations. We can't wait to share it."
TNF Soundings.
News and information from Sandwell Council. You okay, mate? Sandwell Council and West Bromwich Albion unite to tackle men's mental health. You okay, mate? On Saturday, the 1st of November, Sandwell Council teamed up with West Bromwich Albion to host You Okay, Mate, a powerful new public health campaign aimed at breaking the silence around men's mental health. The You Okay, Mate campaign has already gone viral across social media platforms with over 1 million views and continued to grow with Albion fans on match day. Given West Bromwich Albion's draw against Sheffield Wednesday, one message rang loud and clear at the Hawthorns. Mental health doesn't take sides. It affects people from all walks of life, and it's time we talked about it. The event held in the Fan Zone offered a safe space where men could open up, share their stories, and support one another before the match. 79% of suicides in Sandwell are men, and the campaign is urging everyone to check in and ask, "Are you okay, mate?" Cabinet Member for Adults, Social Care, Health and Wellbeing, Councillor Jackie Taylor, said, "Thank you to all the men and women who spoke with us on Saturday. There is a real appetite to get men talking in Sandwell. Please ask for help if you're struggling. There's support out there, and it's a brave step towards feeling better. The statistics show we need to change the culture and encourage men to talk before things reach crisis point. We're proud to work with West Bromwich Albion and partners to shine a light on this issue and help get our men talking." A West Bromwich Albion spokesperson said, "We are very proud as a football club to support Sandwell Council's You Okay Mate campaign. Our captain, Jed Wallace, alongside other members of the men's first team squad, gave this important cause their full backing. We hope hosting Sandwell Council for the Sheffield Wednesday match has helped spread such a crucial message." Dr. Francis Howey, Interim Director of Public Health for Sandwell Council, added, "This bold campaign is informed by local men who told us about the many challenges they face, which can impact negatively on their mental health. We know men often find it hard to talk about their mental health, and we want to make it easier. A simple, 'You okay, mate?' could be the nudge someone needs to talk and seek help. Let's break the stigma. Let's get men talking in Sandwell." For more information on the You Okay Mate campaign and the support available, visit healthysandwell.co.uk/You Okay Mate. Need mental health support? You can visit healthysandwell.co.uk/healthy-mind. You can call Healthy Sandwell free on 0800 011 4656. In crisis, call NHS 111 and choose option 2. Call Samaritans free on 116 123 or visit their website. Let's get men talking in Sandwell.
To end with for this edition, the final part of an interview Prince did with one of the leaders of the church in the garden in Blackheath, and what it meant particularly to the black communities who back in the day, 50 or 60 years ago, were still quite new to this area.
What do you think the impact of this church has been on the Blackheath community in Sandwell, like historically and spiritually?
I think people have always known of the church in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story that backs that up. One night we had a preacher come for the weekend. It was an anniversary every year we had. This is after my granddad. And we had a brother, David Shepherd was his name, famous name, but not the bishop or the artist. But he came from South Wales. Never been here before. Mm-hmm. He'd been to Rowley, but Blackheath, but he'd never been to the church in the garden. It was a horrible November night, right?
Yeah.
He gets to Blackheath, and he's going around the island and slides off the road. It had started snowing.
Oh.
And he bashed his car wheel. He makes his way into a pub, the Beech Tree in Ales Owen Street. He goes in there because it's the only place open, right? At this time, remember, the meeting that he was supposed to be preaching at had already started. We'd already started because it was 7 o'clock start, and he got delayed. He went in the pub and he asks, "Does anybody know where the church in the garden is?" "Oh, yes, we know where that is." So in the local pub, people there knew where the church in the garden was. And I think it has had an impact. As I said, particularly through the work my granddad did with his writings and his tract work. And, I mentioned earlier, that even as far afield internationally, in Ghana and in Nigeria, churches were formed that called themselves the Church in the Garden because of the connection with my granddad and the way that he'd written to them and encouraged them, you know, in the Christian faith.
So I guess this last one is on your personal faith journey, because I think Pam told me that you're a preacher as well. So how has having this as a background impacted you in your faith journey? Did you even start as a Christian yourself?
And there was a time when I really I was brought up obviously, because my mom always came here,
yeah,
and I came to church. But there was a time where, as a teenager, you find in your feet and you start thinking differently, maybe.
Yeah.
And when I was at school, different ideas being taught and everything. So there was a period where I wouldn't have classed myself as a Christian, and in fact, through friends who used to come here occasionally to speak, another story for another time, at another church locally, it was that really developed and brought my Christian faith out in there as in my late teens. And then, as I say, coming here, coming to live here, taking on the responsibility for running the church,
yeah,
then, you know, developed me in a different way. And so now I preach here, there, and everywhere.
So I guess this is the last question. You always have to ask this question as a journalist. Looking into the future, what do you see happening with the church and the garden and this kind of thing that you built in this community? Well, your granddad and this.
That's a good question. And I can't really answer it in any specific way. Mm. Yes, I would like to see the building used in the future, because it's dormant at the moment.
Yeah.
Who knows what's around the corner? We don't know, you know. Yeah. I mean, when COVID came, we actually finished just prior to COVID. I don't know how we'd have gone on in COVID if we'd have tried to obey the rules, or whether we'd have just been under the radar, you know, because it's only a small place, so with all those rules. So I'm not sure what would have happened COVID or post-COVID anyway, because actually that has had a big effect on a lot of churches even today,
yeah,
because a lot of churches today, whereas before COVID they used to have two services and such like, they now only have one service, normally a Sunday morning service.
Yeah, they used to have like night services.
Yeah, night church. Yeah. And in Blackheath, we've got quite a lot of churches, and again, some of them are small and struggling.
Yeah.
So if we did open up, would we be just creating another small church initially? We're never going to be a big church because we just physically haven't got the room.
Yeah.
There are restrictions that you hear that you, because you've got no toilets, you have to use our house if you want the toilet. There's no water or anything like that. So you couldn't do like children's work that a lot of churches feel is integral to the church and growing for the future.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to
do.
So
there are limitations.
It's limitations. In a way, this is more of what my friends in Eastern Europe would call a preaching station. Mm. So it's just a building or a meeting place where preaching takes place,
yeah,
really. A bit of singing as well, but preaching, you know, takes place. But who knows? We don't know. It's a shame that we've got this building and we can't use it. I think that maybe there's a possibility for using it for the immediate neighbours.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe not even if it's not used as a church, but as a meeting place, because we've used it over the years. We were involved with a charity for Friends of Chernobyl Children, bringing children over from Belarus from the Chernobyl disaster.
Okay, yeah.
And for 10 years, this was used as the meeting place for the group, you know, for all their meetings to do
that. Oh, so that could be a possible thing.
Possibly,
meeting
yeah.
as meeting.
And I was approached by another local church that were having some issues about using the building just in the last 6 months or so. Mm. But it's because I'm not here. If I'm away on a Sunday, which I quite often am, it's quite difficult to organise. So it would need me to plan and change my sort of situation, but we never know, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it may be that I'm, you know, something happens, I'm not able to travel in the way that I do and not do what I'm able to do. In 2022, the very first day of 22, I fell in the garden by the fishbowl, slipped straight down on the floor, and this leg got trapped. That's why I've got this on at the moment.
Oh.
And I tore my quad tendon completely severed. So that year, because of various situations, then my wife managed to contact sepsis later in the year, so she was really poorly in hospital for weeks and such like. So we had a year where I didn't do anything. I didn't do any preaching. I couldn't because, you know, I was recovering from that. So we never know, but, you know, if for instance, we were restricted to home or whatever, we'd be ready to go, you know.
Yeah.
It's here.
It's
ready to go. The piano I use is down the house because I play down there. That can come down.
The things are kind of there, but you know, the right time.
You can see is everything's here.
The right time, maybe so, then it can.
And
be
because it's only a room, it's not a great thing to get going. So.
Well, yeah,
so we'll see.
Yeah,
we look to the Lord to lead us.
Of course.
And a big thank you to Prince for bringing us that interview. That visit to the church in the garden happened at the last of the walks in Samwell a month or more ago, which I wasn't able to go on, so I was glad to hear about it. Thanks to readers this week, who were James, Alison, Lauren, Pam, Jenny and Kate. And Pam had to step in for Sargit, whose email seems to have gone awry, and I know that problem, it happens to me sometimes, and so I hope she recovers from that soon. Not very much for me to add, but I do hope we'll see some or all of you at this week's SVI annual forum. I'd like to bring you news of what's happening with the trams, because as you heard, the work to extend it to Dudley and beyond still goes on and has been very much delayed, much to the annoyance of that Dudley councillor. I'd also like to know about whether this tap-in, tap-out system of ticketing, which I presume goes for people paying by card or using a prepaid ticket, how it's going to work for people who use travel passes like me. And when we know about that, then we'll bring you information as to whether we have to tap in and tap out, which probably we will have to, because if nothing else, the West Midland Transport Authority, whatever it's called these days, needs to know how much we're using our passes. Well, the weather is wintry but milder at the moment, but maybe it'll cool down a bit as we move out of next week. That's it for this week's edition. Hope you've enjoyed listening. We'll be back, of course, with you next week. Do remember, though, that the streaming version of the Talking News and the podcast are usually available on the Samwell Visually Impaired website around Friday lunchtime. That's when Sarita gets the upload on there. And I think there has been a bit of confusion about the players on that site. The first player on that page is the podcast player, which doesn't allow you to skip from story to story. It only allows you to edge forward by half a minute or so, but I believe you can speed us up if you want to with that player. There are various buttons which, if you are able to use your screen reader effectively, you can reach. But further down the page, under another heading on the page, is the Talking News Federation player. Now with that one, you can skip forward and backwards by track, so you can just listen to the stories that interest you. But it might help in the near future if we can give a demonstration of how those players work, because whether we like it or not, online distribution, whether it's by streaming or podcasts, is very much the way things are going. But we're certainly not leaving our postal listeners behind, you'll be pleased to hear. Well, bye-bye from me, Ray, then, and all the team, and we'll be with you again next week before the SVI annual forum. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.